I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, I have my husband joining me, and I don't think since I started Faith Conversations that we've had a podcast where it's just the two of us. Some of you may or may not know my husband. His name is Mike Murphy. He's a pastor at a local church here in the Chicagoland area, Christ Church of Oak Brook, and we have great conversations at home. Lots of conversations at home, and some of that spills over onto Facebook. And anyway, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. Just a couple of things. Welcome to you, Mike, and then I'll do a couple of quick housekeeping things. And you know, I strong-armed him into doing this today.
We're at our kitchen table.
Yes, we are right here at the kitchen table. And just a reminder, if you have thoughts and suggestions on podcasts, I've heard from a number of you, you can email me at faithconvo@gmail.com. That's faith, C-O-N-V-O, faithconvo@gmail.com. And I am super excited about how the podcast is growing. Many of you have been sharing it on your Facebook page when a new episode comes out. I can't tell you how helpful that is. Because, you know, you got to get this thing marketed and get it out by word of mouth. And so many of you have been helpful with that, and I appreciate it. Well, Mike, I think we should dive in.
And
I thought today it might be good to talk about something that, honestly, a lot of us are scratching our heads, upset, struggling, and that's the presidential race. So, you know, we don't get the final vote until November.
Is there an election this year?
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, you've made me become a lot more thoughtful about it. And we're going to talk about a lot of things today, and not everyone's going to agree. One of the things I love about the podcast is I think we can be thought-provoking without people feeling like we're shoving anything down their throats. I think it's important to talk about these issues because we have to be thoughtful about our own lives and our lives as they influence and impact others. And certainly our vote does that.
Yeah, oh, it very much does. And Anita, this really is kind of a crazy election season. I love politics. I was at a government major in college. I worked for the city of Minneapolis for a time. I've always followed the political process, and I'm sitting here just scratching my head. I mean, one minute I'm almost crying. The other one I'm just going, smiling in that incredulous way, saying, I can't believe this is happening.
Well, and laughing sometimes because of the absurdity of parts of it.
Right. But and yet it's a very much an election that I think is going to be at a pivot point for our country.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We have to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'll just tell listeners that to the podcast that you have watched almost all of the presidential debates.
Yes.
I can't bring myself to do it that much. But I do think that Americans need to be paying attention, and it would behoove them. I mean, there aren't going to be that many left if there are. I don't even know. I think maybe there's for sure one more Democratic debate.
Right. Right now, there's five candidates left.
Okay.
There's two Democratic and three on the Republican side.
Okay. And Donald Trump, Ted Cruz,
John Kasich,
Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders
right.
On the Democratic side.
Right.
So, but you were talking with me a little bit earlier this week about a grid that you've been thinking through, and I thought it would be helpful just to talk about it because I think many of us are struggling to figure this out, and there are still some states, you know, with primaries and caucuses, et cetera.
Right. We've got a big one coming up on, after this podcast.
Yes.
On Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So in Wisconsin. So I've been asking the question of myself, you know, how do you decide, Mike, who to vote for? And as a pastor, I'm a pastor at a church. I'm one of the pastoral staff. We never, ever, ever tell people who to vote for.
Sure.
But all of us, I'm sure, on the pastoral staff, people saying, how do you make up your mind as to who you'll cast your ballot for? And so I've always tried to be thoughtful about that. And the first thing I tell people is always be thoughtful and prayerful and kind of dig in and try to understand all the issues. But last night I sat down, I don't know why, and I said, okay, there's got to be a little bit better grid for people. And so this is what I came around with. I assigned each candidate on a scale of 1 to 5 a ranking in the following categories. And these categories just come out of my own brain, just kind of arbitrary. But it really helped me to take a look as to what I believed about the different candidates. And these are the categories. One, I asked myself the question, is this person smart enough to be president?
Okay, that, smart enough, category one.
Right. And that's just not intellectual prowess. It's also
their emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Intelligence.
I think that's important. Thank you.
I also asked a question about their integrity. Is this a person that's trustworthy?
All right, smart enough, full of integrity.
Right.
Okay.
Then I asked a question, does this person have credible experience? Now, I'm a pastor. I've run a foundation. I've done a lot of things. I've got a lot of experience. I don't know if I have the experience to run the country.
Okay.
So I'm saying some kind of credible experience because this is a complicated thing. I asked myself the question, is this person even electable?
Okay.
Right? And that's very a subjective kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, what goes into that? What makes someone electable? Or maybe we'll come back to that.
Okay. The next category was, does this person, can they bring people together? We have a fragmented country, and can they bring people together?
Can they unify the country?
Yeah.
Okay, can they unify the country? Okay.
Next thing I looked at was, are they truthful?
Oh, boy, now that's a tough one.
Well, it's not as tough as you might think.
Okay, all right.
And
And I would hope it wouldn't be. Sadly, I even make that comment.
Yeah, so. I mean, one study did with one particular candidate said that in any given debate, they lie 75 times.
Wow.
But that goes for everybody. Everybody twists things, and you have to say...
Spins it.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
the
it's
word.
The spin. They spin it. It spins.
Okay.
How much of that can
that's
you take?
That's every politician, even every, your favorite. I yes, want to say that. Anyone's
yes,
favorite.
Everyone. Because okay. They all have been known to lie every once in a while.
Spin. Yeah. All right. Carry on.
I also want to know, is it possible that this person would be accepted by leaders in the rest of the world?
Ooh, okay. Accepted by leaders worldwide.
You know, and respected.
Oh, accepted and... All right. Mm-hmm. I think I like that. Accepted and respected. By leaders worldwide.
The next thing is, and this is probably out of my faith that comes most of this, mm-hmm. I believe very much in the compassion of Christ, but I ask myself the question, is this person compassionate?
Okay, is this a compassionate person?
And then, do they have the knowledge of issues?
Okay, are they knowledgeable about the issues that are out there?
And so what I did is I went through each of those and I assigned each of them kind of a grade 1 to 5 and tried to list all the candidates. And I don't think we have to talk about what my list came up with, but I found it was very, very helpful to take a look at it. By the way, in my grading, no one got higher than a C+.
Oh, you know, that's interesting.
You know, between 3 and 4.
Okay.
But then, so now I, and one person got a very, very low score, you know, 1 point something.
Okay.
And so and then I have to ask myself, okay, what does this mean? But all of a sudden, it's a little easier for me to kind of go after it and say, okay, this is the person I might vote for.
Okay. Now, granted, for us here in Illinois, our primary's done.
Our primary's done.
But
I'm looking forward to November.
I'll do
the same thing with that.
Right.
Because I don't want it to be a knee-jerk reaction to anything. And as you know, Anita, I'm not in favor of those pamphlets that are handed out at churches and places just saying this is the way you should vote based on a very, very small number of issues. But I was just looking for something that would help me to thoughtfully and prayerfully begin to go after this election in a way that got beyond my own knee-jerk reactions.
All right, not to get us off track, but something that you just said made me think of this. You know, you're not for handing out these voters' guides at churches, and I'm not for that either,
right.
Because that presupposes a particular party generally.
Yes.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And they go a variety of ways.
Yes. I understand
Democrat
that. That's helpful.
Or Republican.
Yeah. Okay. But what, and we talked about this recently. Melinda and I filled in at a local Chicago radio station, and we had you on actually and talked about what should be talked about from the pulpit. I mean, what should a pastor say other than just encouraging their people to be to go out and vote and be responsible? You know, obviously not telling them how to, but is that all that should be said?
Well, I think here's the number one thing that I wish all pastors would say.
Okay.
That they would tell their congregation, let your faith inform your politics.
Okay.
Not your politics inform your faith.
Because that's awfully closely intertwined, or I've seen it be really closely intertwined.
And then I think we have to take a look at it and saying, because as I read scripture, the call of Jesus doesn't wrap itself around any of the political parties very well. I mean, he's asking for a totally different kind of thing. Jesus talked about an upside down kingdom, and sometimes we want our kingdom of our country to be right side up. And so by definition, it has to be at odds.
Mm. Okay. All right. Good food for thought. A great grid. I'm just going to, you know, mention these things in case you want to write them down and didn't do that the first time around. But Mike's grid is for the presidential candidates. You know, are they smart enough to, you know, take that office? Are they full of integrity, a person of integrity? Do they have credible experience to step into those shoes? Are they electable? And say again what that one is.
Well, is there any possibility that if I supported them that this person could be elected?
Okay.
If it's not, then what do I do? This is especially true in the primary season where I think you have to be smart.
That's okay. Very good. Can they unify the country? A good question. Good thing for the grid. Are they truthful? Mm-hmm. Or how truthful are they, be the question for political candidates. Are they accepted and respected by world leaders, by other world leaders?
That's really important.
Yep. Are they a person of compassion?
Yes.
They a compassionate individual? Will they carry that with them into the White House? I can't take you anywhere. Bumping the table and dropping things. All right. And then lastly, making noise on my podcast. That's what you're doing. All right. And then lastly, are they knowledgeable about the issues?
Right.
Okay. The important issues that are out there.
Right.
Current issues. Okay. Very helpful.
And if they're not knowledgeable, do they have a good group of advisors?
I was just
them?
Thinking yeah. that because, and I guess what's covered in this particular one, because you didn't mention what do they know about foreign policy, I guess. But that's encased in this one, knowledgeable about the issues, and do they have good people around
them? Right.
Okay, I'll buy that. I like the grid. I'm going to think that through, and maybe some of you would want to do that as well. All right, we're going to move on and talk about something that you do weekly.
I do.
And you do this on Facebook, and it's interesting to me how many people share this on their pages and how many people comment. It's all very interesting. So you do this thing called the Rumblings, and it's always on Fridays, largely on Fridays, I think. And I had to look at your list this week since it was April 1st. I didn't know whether there were any April Fools ones in here, but there weren't. They're always thought-provoking. What I love about it is this. Not everyone agrees with everyone. I may not agree with every one of your rumblings.
That's right.
Very respectful dialogue on Facebook. People know that they can state their thoughts and opinions on these rumblings.
Yes. I monitor my thread.
Yeah, you do. That's true. You have.
If somebody's just going to be a jerk, I just ask them to leave.
Yeah, you.
But they can. But they can
comment if it's respectful.
Oh, yeah. I want people to disagree.
It's good, right?
Yeah.
That's excellent. I love it. So there are always 10? Is that what it's
always
10? Your
10.
Top, your top 10.
That's
the
all my brain handles.
Okay. Do you ever have to stretch to get to 10?
Yeah, sometimes I put 2 into 1 with a very awkward segue.
Okay. Well, you mean you got more than 10?
I really got more than 10 sometimes.
Okay, you don't have to stretch to get it to 10, probably.
No. Okay. I got more.
I probably would have to stretch. Okay, so let's kind of talk through the rumblings this week. I think this will be interesting. Or maybe the highlights for you.
Well, I always like the first one.
Okay, well, that's good.
that I put on, and it was got me thinking about Holy Week.
Oh, sure, recently.
And I think the saddest words in the Bible are in the book of Mark. This is from the J.B. Phillips translation of the Bible. J.B. Phillips was an Englishman, and really wrote a beautiful paraphrase of the New Testament.
So whose words are the saddest?
It's Pilate's words. where he says he's sending Jesus to death because he wanted to satisfy the crowd.
Ooh.
And I just wonder sometimes, well, what I said is I get that. I know what that's all about because I do that too. And I bet a lot of the people that read my stuff know what that's like. A lot of decisions are made because they want to satisfy the crowd.
Well, and I think of that on the macro and micro level. Oh, I mean, yeah. A parent, there are things I remember when, you know, my son was still at home, there were things that I would say to satisfy the crowd of one, just to make it through the day, you know, you take that to a bigger stage,
sure.
It can be more, much more dangerous, though.
Oh, it can be because we don't want to make waves oftentimes. Mm. And in this day and age, sometimes the most innocuous things could create a wave. Mm. I remember one time, and we've talked about this before, I was at a dinner with you, and the crowd was, we would call them very, very conservative in their faith. And they were just knocking the president of the United States around the table. And I just happened to mention something good about the president. Mm. And that crowd turned against me. They just didn't want anything to do with me.
There was a lot of silence initially.
There's a lot of silence. And I just felt like somehow we need to get balance in the midst of some Christian people.
Mm-hmm.
That we just, it's not right just to keep on knocking someone.
Well, here's the truth. We're never going to agree 100% with whoever's in that office.
No, we're not going to.
But there does need to be an element of respect for that office and person.
But we go with the crowd, know.
Yeah,
we go with the crowd. And so if we're a Republican and we go to a Democrat, a church filled with Democrats, we oftentimes might remain quiet because we don't want to get everybody upset with us.
Or this vice versa.
Yeah.
So the saddest words in the Bible.
Well, yep, wanting to satisfy the crowd.
All right, let's go move on to another one.
How about number two?
Okay.
You know, all last week during the campaign, we were getting all kinds of things about Muslims.
Oh, sure.
And fear. It sounded like hate. So last week, I went to a local mosque, and this was for the second time. You came with me the first time.
Mm-hmm. Because there was an open house.
There was an open house there. And I just really felt the need to show up to silently declare to those folks that not all of us are going to let fear and hate win.
Mm.
I mean, I think that's a big part of the agenda that I have. That's part of the thing that I think pastors need to tell their
congregants.
Mm-hmm. If you're going in the direction of fear, if you're going in the direction of hate, then you might not be on the road that Jesus walked.
Hmm. All right.
So just showing up sometimes can make a difference.
Yeah, just showing up. True. Okay, let's move on. What else?
Well, I did mention that you and I went to the wealth managers at our bank to see how we could do the hundreds of dollars that we had.
the tens of dollars that we have. Okay.
And we're going to be able to retire at age, I'm 10 years older.
I'm going
to be 90. You're going to be 80.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so.
I got to work harder,
yeah,
obviously.
So what I'm suggesting now is our retirement plan is that we find 52 people willing to put up with the two of us for a week each year. And especially people that know us who live in the South are welcome to invite us.
Well, at least during the winter anyway.
Yeah, during the winter for obvious reasons.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Wow.
Another one I had was this, that, as we talk about the war on terror, I begin to realize that maybe before I deal with that on a micro level, I needed to deal with it on a more micro level. And so I asked myself, what is it about me? Do I have moments of hate that leak out? Do I create discord in any way? Because I think the truth is we create a climate around us. Sometimes it's inviting, sometimes not so much. But then asking myself the question, what needs to die in me in order for me to live more redemptively?
Wow.
And I think in some ways we all have to come to grips with our inner terrorist.
Ooh.
Because I think it's there, and I think that's a very, very necessary step.
Wow. That's food for deep thought. And that informs some of the others that are on this list, or that informs a lot of things we do in our lives, actually, if we just pondered that one.
Yeah. I grew up Roman Catholic, and we used to do a thing called the examination of conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And in Protestant circles, people are asked, do the exam, and it's the same thing. But to take a look at our life at the end of each day and just go, how did I not live in a way that was noticing God.
Well, I think of Plato, right? The unexamined life is not worth living.
Socrates.
Thank you. Got the wrong guy.
Well, that's all right.
Same era.
Same things. I think they went to the same restaurant.
Yeah,
or
there
something.
You go. one of them overheard it from the other one's table.
Yeah.
The unexamined life is not worth living. I think we're watching a lot of folks living out an unexamined life.
Yeah, and it's very, very unfortunate. And sometimes people can take a look at their Facebook posts, what they do talk about with their closest friends, and ask themselves, hey, are they spewing hate and discord?
Or are they spewing nothingness?
Right.
I mean, you know, is there no thoughtfulness out there? Is it just, you know, rainbows and butterflies or something? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Puff stuff. I think we are called as followers of Christ to be thoughtful people. That doesn't mean that there can't be humor and fun. For instance, the one rumbling that you just mentioned about our retirement and looking for, you know, one person week for the 52 weeks for us to stay.
Well, I wasn't kidding about that.
Okay. All right, great.
It looks according to our debate that that's
trouble.
What's going to be necessary.
Great.
Yeah.
But I think humor is necessary.
Yeah, it is. Because sometimes you got to stand back and you just kind of smile and just
laugh at yourself and others, right?
Oh,
laugh at others. Wait a minute. Just laugh at yourself.
Just laugh at yourself, and there's plenty of ammunition there.
In our household, for sure it is. Yeah, we have fun. Okay, let's. I think we've got time to talk through a few more of these.
Well, going back to Holy Week, Holy Week got me thinking a little bit, and I wrote about this. I was thinking about Jesus being fully human and fully divine.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, I have theological training and all that good stuff. I have letters after my name. But that's not the easiest thing for me to wrap my head around. And I've always wondered, when did Jesus know what, when?
Mm.
And I talk to some people, and they're just so sure of what it is they believe in that area. But I don't know sometimes exactly what Jesus knew when and how that came to be. So I'm asked the question, how did that happen in Jesus' life? And the truth is, we don't know. And so part of faith for me is embracing the mystery of it all.
Hmm.
And that's different. We just embrace that as being part of the journey of faith.
Always good with mystery.
Aren't you?
I know. I say we. I'm talking about other people. I'm great with mystery. Not really. No, I think it's something. I think it is something that we struggle with because don't we all want it all buttoned down? We want to know all the answers. But the reality is there is no way to ever know all the answers about God.
Oh, no.
So there has to be mystery, and we have to be okay with it.
We do. I mean, you take something like end times doctrine. There's a million different theories out there about that. I usually run away from people that got it all locked down.
Mm-hmm.
Because we really don't know.
Right.
We don't know.
But people tell you they do.
Oh, yeah, and they've got all the signs, and there's books and all this kind of stuff. Mystery, more and more, as I get older, is just an important part of my life, and it really enriches my faith. It doesn't make it less.
Well, if you look at the church fathers and mothers, they embraced mystery.
Oh, yeah.
If you go back in history, not to be rhyming, they embraced mystery. But that's exactly true. And somewhere along the way, many of us became certain of everything.
Yes. And I think we did that because, I think we want people to tell us what to think instead of finding that out for ourselves.
Yeah, instead of realizing and figuring out how to think.
Sometimes theology is really our best guess. Because a lot of good people might have different points of view on things. I think that there's some things for myself that are non-negotiable. That's pretty much wrapped up in the Apostles' Creed for me.
Yeah,
and then the rest of it, I'm glad to talk about. I'm even glad to talk about that with somebody, too.
Yeah, that's helpful. All right, let's talk about another one.
All right, let's see what else we...
And actually, I want to say to folks, while you're picking the next one to talk about, I just want to say that you can friend Mike on Facebook, Mike Murphy, and you're probably thinking, there are a zillion Mike Murphys.
It's the good-looking one.
Exactly, with the sunset behind him. You can go to my page and find him, and then, and then friend him there, because I think these rumblings are worth reading each week. Okay, what else?
Yeah, been thinking, you know, as I think about the culture, I believe that we've got a lot of turmoil in our culture right now. And I'm beginning to believe that the reason for that is there's some last gasp attempts by those who have held power for the longest time to try to hold on to it.
Ooh. Which rumbling? What number is this?
That's number three.
Okay. We're going back up. All right.
And I said, you know, the times aren't just a changing; they've changed. Mm. And once we come to grips with that, we're in a better position to help architect what's needed next.
Okay, I buy that.
I think that just might be more interesting than desperately clinging to the past.
Well, desperately clinging to the past is not really very productive.
Well, it's not, and it can get us angry, make us angry because things are changing, and we just don't like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 65 years old, and I still feel pretty alive, and I'm asking myself, well, how best can I help be an architect for what's next going on in our world? That's an exciting place for a person of faith to be, because all of a sudden we're realizing God has a role for us here.
Regardless of our age.
Regardless of our age, where are we going to invest our time and energy? You know, as we went to Easter service at another church last week, we actually went on a Saturday night, we heard the pastor, Bill Hybels from Willow Creek Church, actually said, how are you going to invest your one and only life? Mm. And it doesn't stop at a certain age, but it's how do you live that out? Invest your life in such a way that it's really going to be helpful to the rest of us.
Yeah, and don't just put one foot in front of the other blindly and complacently. I think it's really easy to kind of fall into that way of living. And I'm not talking a day at a time, which is that I understand that way of living as well, but just much more thoughtfully, not numbly.
Yeah. Well, for anybody who's listening, when's the last time you've really been surprised by God? Mm. Because when we do that, then all of a sudden we're living in the moment. Mm. That's what Jesus did. He lived in the moment. And if you read scripture, you'll see that he never got any place on time. He was always stopped by someone. There was always somebody grabbing for his attention. And if you notice, he stopped. Mm. He stopped and he dealt with what was there. That was the most important thing in his life.
You know what? He stopped. He listened.
He paid attention.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, these people he was listening to were the very people that ended up killing him. Mm. But he knew it was important for him to be present to them. And I think that's just so remarkable. I want to be like that. Mm. I just really want to be like that.
Whew, good place to stop, actually. I really enjoyed this. And I wanted to say, I didn't say this earlier, but I got an email from somebody, maybe it was a Facebook comment, a couple of them actually, a week or so ago, from someone saying, would you, you know, thinking back to the days when I was doing the radio show and we did current events programs, and they were asking, can you please do some more current events programs, but do them on your podcast? And this is kind of that.
Well, we can kind of do that. Rumblings are.
We should do this more frequently.
Sure.
I would also like to hear from people. I'm considering doing more than one podcast a week. I know on my website, anitalustria.com, there's an opportunity there where you can support the podcast, because I can't do it for free, but I am doing it for free. And so, you know, or rather, it costs money to buy the equipment to do the podcast.
Right.
So I'm trying to recoup some of that. So there's a little a P, and it's not Pinterest. There's a P for Patreon. There's a site that you can click on, and you can say, "Oh, I'd pay 50 cents. I'd pay $1. I'd pay, you know, whatever, for a podcast."
Sure, or somebody could pay $50 or $100 per podcast if they wanted to.
If they were able.
Chances are that's not going
to
happen.
Listen to you. You're
I'm just a marketer.
I love you, the marketer, the husband trying to pay the way. So that's something that you could consider, but also. So would like to hear from you. Email me at faithconvo@gmail.com and let me know if you'd be interested in more than one podcast per week. That's the other question I have. Well, I'm delighted, Mike, that you joined me today, this week. Appreciate that. And we will do this again, okay?
All right.
I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.